It was an extraordinary thing to witness, you know, an American president on the move and what he brings with him. The soldiers, the backup, the cooks, you know, the translators, the doctors, this whole apparatus. And I remember, it was at that moment, I remember reading what it was like to travel with Marcus Aurelius and how he had the comitatus with him. All the same people who traveled on Air Force One would be traveling with the emperor.
Welcome to Book Tour. I'm Netta Ulaby. This week, Colin Murphy reads from Are We Rome? Murphy believes we are, but in ways that might be surprising. It's not America's military might or decadent lifestyles that concern him. It's that America, like Rome, seems to see itself as the center of the world, leaving us blind to what's beyond our borders. Like Rome, Murphy says, we're now putting more public tasks in private hands, hiring fewer police, for example, and more security guards. The author warns this is exactly how the gears of government break. Murphy's interests are eclectic. His previous books include Rubbish, an anthropological study of garbage, The World According to Eve, about women and the Bible, and a collection of essays aptly named Just Curious. But Murphy is even better known as an unflappable editor who spent two decades helping define The Atlantic Monthly. He moved to Vanity Fair last year. Murphy does see a crucial difference between Rome and America. Where Rome was all about self-satisfaction, he says Americans seek self-improvement. It's this quality, he believes, that may make it possible for us to reinvent ourselves rather than to fall. This reading of Are We Rome? Took place in May 2007 at the Politics and Prose Bookstore in Washington, D.C.
Thank you so much. I called this book Are We Rome? Just so that there was no mistake about what the question at the heart of this book really is. I suppose I could have tried for something more lyrical, and in fact I did. I was dissuaded from it. But that really does get at the core of my, and I think our, preoccupations. I'm asking this question for two reasons, and I think Americans ask this question for two reasons. One of them is historic. From the very beginning of the Republic, the comparison of Rome and America has been on our minds. America was a republic that broke away from a monarchy. Rome was a monarchy that evolved into a republic. The founding fathers were very concerned about what had happened to the Roman Republic. Why had it become a tyranny? They were concerned lest something similar happen to our own young republic. The idea of checks and balances comes from Rome. Certain ideas of public virtue, arguably long lost, come from Rome. George Washington's rules of civility have an analog in the rules of behavior that elite Romans lived by. The architecture of the Capitol, which you see every day, is Roman to its core. So there's a very deep kind of Roman gene pool in the United States that just goes way, way back. And so does the concern about empire. But the events since 1989, since the fall of the Berlin Wall, since the emergence of the United States as the world's sole superpower, really bring this comparison home. Now, really for the first time, you have a situation where the United States, you know, is, without competition, the wealthiest, the most complex, the most powerful nation on the earth, and that is pretty much what Rome was in the West, at least. So that comparison between the two places comes up pretty naturally, and you hear it among the columnists and the pundits, and you hear it coming up in two different ways. You hear a kind of triumphalist version of this, which is, yeah, we are the new Rome, and they had the Pax Romana, and it's time for a Pax Americana. It's time for us to assert our will in the world in ways that we think are right, and we should embrace that burden, you know, with fervor and moral certitude. And then you hear another group, and I'm simplifying, of course, that is worried about taking that course, that that would prefer what George Bush in his debates with Al Gore called a humble foreign policy, and that at least was wary of bestriding the world too much like a colossus. So this debate, too, is why the question, are we Rome, comes up. And as I'll go on to explain, there are a lot of other reasons why it should come up that don't really involve military power. Let me just tell you the genesis of this book, really in a very proximate sense. Why did I decide to do this now? In the summer of 2004, I took a plane to Ireland, and the plane landed at Shannon Airport about an hour after George Bush had arrived for one of the summit meetings. And as we drove down the tarmac, the pilot said to us, if you look out the right side of the plane, you'll see something that you may never again see in your life. And what it was both Air Force Ones had arrived and were parked nose to nose. And they had already been surrounded by concertina wire. And U.S. troops were inside the concertina wire. There were, you know, anti-missile stations. And up on the customs area of Shannon Airport, there were guards. And then when we finally were able to get our car and we tried to drive north, the roads were blocked off. They must have mobilized the entire Irish police force. The Irish tanks, such as they were out on the roads. It was an extraordinary thing to witness, you know, an American president on the move and what he brings with him, the soldiers, the backup, the cooks. Air Force One can serve a meal for 2,000 people. You know, the translators. You know, the doctors. This whole apparatus, and I remember. It was at that moment I remember reading a great book about the Roman emperor by a scholar named Fergus Millar, in which I think he describes Marcus Aurelius and what it was like to travel with Marcus Aurelius and how he had the comitatus with him, which is the group of people that if it were in America, it would be the group of people that had the email designation EOB or EOP for Executive Office of the President. It's all the same people who travel on Air Force One would be traveling with the emperor. And this would be a group of, you know, many thousands traveling across the countryside. This correspondence between what I was witnessing at Shannon and this memory of the progress of Marcus Aurelius through the countryside just made me think that maybe now was a moment to write this book. I started off wary of facile comparisons between Rome and America. They're made all the time, and therefore the natural reaction is to think, well, there must not be anything to it. And I began by, of course, you know, doing a lot of reading and compiling, I think, a kind of rough ledger of comparisons between Rome and America before settling on a handful of issues that I think we really ought to be focused on. And so the one passage that I'd like to read to you is the passage in which I describe this ledger book. And then I will stop and I will briefly explain what I think the half dozen or so really core similarities are, and then open it up to you for your thoughts and disagreements or hosannas. So I began with the question, are we Rome? One way to answer the question is by assembling a crude ledger book of comparisons. My own would start as follows. Leaving aside the knotty and partly semantic issue of what an empire is and whether the United States truly is one, Rome and America are the most powerful actors in their worlds by many orders of magnitude. Their power includes both military might and the soft power of language, culture, commerce, technology, and ideas. Tacitus said of the seductive amenities brought to Britain by Rome, the simple natives gave the name of culture to this factor of their enslavement. Rome and America are comparable in physical size. The Roman Empire and its Mediterranean lake would fit inside the 3 million square miles of the lower 48 states, though not with a lot to spare. Both Rome and America created global structures, administrative, economic, military, cultural, that the rest of the world and their own citizens came to take for granted, as gravity and photosynthesis are taken for granted. Both are societies made up of many peoples, open to newcomers, willing to absorb the genes and lifestyles and gods of everyone else, and to grant citizenship to incoming tribes from all corners of the earth. And because of this, the identities of both change organically over time. Romans and Americans revel in engineering prowess and grandiosity. Whenever I see the space shuttle standing upright and inching slowly on its crawler towards the launching pad, I think back to the Rome of Hadrian's day and the gargantuan statue of the sun, as tall as the shuttle, being dragged into place by 24 elephants. Romans and Americans can't get enough of laws and lawyers and lawsuits. They believe deeply in private property. They relish the ritual humiliation of public figures. Americans through comedy and satire, talk radio and court TV. The Romans through all of these things, through vicious satire to be sure, but also by means of the censoria nota, the public airing name by name of everything the great men of the time should be ashamed of. Both Romans and Americans accept enormous disparities of wealth and allow the gap to widen. Ramsay MacMullen, one of the most prominent modern historians of Rome, has said that 5 centuries of imperial social evolution can be reduced to 3 words: fewer have more. Both Romans and Americans treat the nouveau riche with lacerating scorn, perhaps concealing hints of admiration. Both see themselves as a chosen people, and both see their national character as exceptional. Both recover from colossal setbacks, and both endure periods of catastrophic leadership. Though when it comes to murderous insanity, some of Rome's emperors set the bar very high. Both Rome and America look back to an imagined, nobler, simpler past, and both see the future in terms of manifest destiny. The Romans spoke of having been granted imperium sine fine, an empire without end. The American dollar bill uses Rome's own language and words derived from Virgil to proclaim a novus ordo seclorum, a new order of the ages. But Rome, in all its long history, never left the Iron Age, whereas America, in its short history, has already leapt through the Industrial Age to the Information Age and the Biotech Age. Wealthy as it was, Rome lived close to the edge. Many regions were one dry spell away from famine. America enjoys an economy of abundance, even surfeit. It must beware the diseases of overindulgence. Rome was always a slaveholding polity, with the profound moral and social retardation that this implies. America started out as a slaveholding polity and decisively cast slavery aside. Rome emerged out of a city-state and took centuries to fully let go of a city-state's methods of governance. America, from very early on, began to administer itself as a continental power. Rome had no middle class, as we understand the term, whereas for America, the middle class is our core social fact, our ballast, our gyroscope, our compass. Rome had a powerful but tiny aristocracy and entrenched ideas about social pecking order. Even at its most democratic, Rome was not remotely as democratic as America at its least democratic, under a British monarch. In Roman eyes, the best way to acquire wealth was the old-fashioned way, and still not a bad way, by inheriting it. The Romans looked down on entrepreneurship, which Americans hold in the highest esteem, and despised manual labor. Rome desired foreign colonies and protectorates and moved aggressively to acquire them. America, with few exceptions, prefers to extend its reach by other means. Rome was economically static. America is economically transformative. For all its engineering skills, Rome generated few original ideas in science or technology. America is a hothouse of innovation and creativity. Despite its deficiencies, as we may perceive them, Rome flourished as a durable culture for more than 1,000 years and acted as a great power for 6 centuries. Whether America has that kind of staying power remains to be seen. So that is how I started off that crude ledger book of comparisons. And in the end, I think somewhat to my surprise, I came to the conclusion that, in fact, there are some macro similarities between Rome and America that are really worth paying attention to. Yes, there are 1,000 differences. And yes, some of those differences are really existential and important, and we need to bear them in mind. But the similarities are important, too. Sometimes a similarity can be enough to tilt you in enough of a bad direction. One of them has to do simply with the nature of the capital. I'm not a stranger to Washington. I lived here for about 10 years, worked at the Smithsonian, and so I've known this place for a long time. It's not news to you that this is in many ways an artificial place, as Rome was an artificial place. It was not a seat of industry. It was not producing anything except administration. It was absorbing the wealth from all over the empire. Everything somehow depended on the revenue that was coming into Rome. So it was artificial, and it also thought of itself as the center of the world. I don't know if they used the phrase about, you know, the most important man in the most important city in the world to refer to the emperor the way they do the president, but it had that frame of mind. Something about the artificiality of the capital and the belief in its centrality is very similar. Related to that is the sense of the outside world. If you're going to see yourself as the center of the world, you may be led to think that the rest of the world doesn't matter all that much. This is not a Washington problem, it's an American problem. I was reading just the other day about some of the new National Geographic polls about what Americans know about the rest of the world. Of course, we know nothing. They always seem to add new questions just to make the ignorance seem even worse. You know, which direction do you have to go to get from Australia to Japan? You know, 75% say south. And but this inability to actually get outside America and see us as others see it, or to think that the minds of people who are not Americans are different, is a real drawback. The Romans had this drawback too, presuming that really they were the world. Why did it matter what others thought or how others behaved? This led them into some real troubles. The Battle of Teutoburg Forest is one great example where they completely underestimated a primitive barbarian enemy and lost three entire legions. So the outside world is another problem, the way we in Rome view it. A third has to do with borders and assimilation. Both Rome and America were concerned about borders. But it's a complicated concern, because both Rome and America were also interested in the people coming into the empire. Rome and America were the most successful assimilationist societies that the planet has ever known. Roman culture for its time was so attractive, so well organized, and offered so much to people who came under its sway, that it made willing converts. It didn't need a huge army to keep order. People were willing to buy into the order.